More juice, Anya?
No, thank you.
You're still angry at me.
A little.
I admit it was a bit high-handed arbitrarily transferring you here to the palace. Are you comfortable here, by the way?
Yes.
A gilded cage is still a cage, Anya thought to herself. It reminded her uncomfortably of the last time she felt that way. This whole bizarre adventure had started then, in the ballroom aboard the Ocean Venture. She made herself smile. She didn't want to get on bad terms with Wira this morning. Aside from the fact that it could have unpleasant side effects, she had thought of something during the night that might help them get the coffin back. But she was none too sure how it would be received, coming from a woman, and a mere foreigner at that. Wira didn't seem to have any trouble taking her seriously, but that was in her own area of expertise. This suggestion came from far afield.
Your majordomo, Krishna, keeps fluttering around like a mother bird, making sure my every wish is tended to. He really is a sweet man.
He does worry. But really, Anya, it was much too risky to leave you at large in the capital. You obviously have a gift for survival, but there is such a thing as pressing one's luck.
I suppose it's a good thing you're so solicitous of your contractor's welfare.
I hope you don't think it's only that, Anya. I have come to be very fond of you these last few days. I hope that's not too forward of me.
Forward?
Are you all right?
I'm fine.
Have some more water.
Thank you.
I have to go soon, Anya. There's training with my commandos, then buckling down to work.
I thought of something last night.
Yes?
About our problem with the pirate fleet, I mean.
Oh.
I don't pretend to be any kind of military or intelligence expert, but couldn't you try making the Philippines too hot for the Red Hand?
I take it you're not talking about climate change.
Only figuratively. We need to get the Red Hand junks into international waters, right?
Quite.
And they're not likely to fall for an offer to make a swap on the open sea. But it strikes me everybody's pretty keyed up about terrorism these days, and the Philippines have a real live active insurgency going on.
More than one.
You told me the Rimba Perak terrorists hate the Red Hand and have fought battles with them. I don't know if Eddie Caucao's gang gets on any better with the Philippine terror groups, but as Purnoma says, terror makes for some pretty strange bedfellows.
So it does.
I won't ask if you have intelligence operators in the Philippines, because I know it's a friendly nation and everything. But maybe you have contacts who could pass word to the Philippine government that the Red Hand is running guns to their own Muslim separatist guerrillas. And then maybe you could use a different third party to tip the pirates that the Filipinos are about to hit them on suspicion of terrorism. That should flush them right out into the open sea.
Frame them, you mean?
Well, that's one way to put it.
Capital idea. Worthy of Lestari herself. If you'll forgive me, I'll rush off. I want to get Purnoma started on this scheme before I head out to train. I think you've solved our dilemma, Anya. I could hug you!
Yes, you could.
Anya spent the day in fruitless research. She'd started receiving answers on the queries she had sent out to various associates by email concerning any mysterious discoveries made during the Sixth Crusade. They weren't much help. She found hundreds of web pages making reference to the alleged event she had read about. Almost all were worded precisely the same, down to mistakes in punctuation and spelling, meaning all of them were copied from a single, none-too-informative original. Common as that was on the web, analog world libraries yielded similar results. Various entries in the religious conspiracy genre detailed the same story in about the same words. One referred as a source to an eccentric history of the Crusades published in French in the 1920s, a copy of which actually existed in the Mariapuri University Library. It was delivered to Anya by courier, since she was not permitted to leave the palace without an escort. The book added elaboration without illumination. Two of her contacts emailed her a reference to an English book from 1841. When, late in the afternoon, she got hold of scans of that account, it turned out the French one was an almost word-for-word translation of it. Cut-and-paste historiography was not an invention of the Internet age. She already knew that too well. A query on alt.archaeology.com evoked a tidal wave of responses. Wild speculations and flames for her being so stupid as to waste everybody's time asking about such a self-evident fairy tale came out about 50-50. The speculation ranged from the coffin containing the bones of Jesus to the corpse of an alien from a flying saucer that crashed in Syria in the 11th century and was recovered by the legendary Saladin. The latter account was almost 1,000 words long and filled with remarkably authentic-seeming detail, not a word of which Anya found remotely credible. She admired the feat of fiction writing. Most of the small percentage of actual discussion revolved around the likelihood of Frederick II actually founding a militant order of knights, or at least of religious knights. That produced some fascinating details concerning his passion for astronomy and his extensive menagerie. The closest to a consensus, that was anywhere near relevant to Anya's inquiry anyway, was that, of course, he wouldn't. Unless something had turned up on his watch that actually challenged his irreverent outlook. The rest of the posts once again went to confirm Anya's hypothesis that no discussion thread remained on topic for more than 4 layers of nested replies. Anya emerged from her room into late twilight and headed downstairs to stretch her legs. As she reached the foot of the broad stairs, the Grand Vizier came up to her with his robes flapping like the wings of an agitated bird.
Miss Creed, you have a visitor.
A visitor?
Out in the garden, if you please.
Krishna? Who is it?
Someone to see you.
The hedges and vine-twined trellises suddenly opened out into a clear circle perhaps 20 feet across. A carved stone table and some metal chairs stood in the middle of it. Torches had been set up around it, trailing orange flames into the clear, starry sky. The aroma of kerosene in their wells tainted the lush, sweet scent of night-blooming flowers. A man stood waiting for her. He wore a tropical weight suit in what looked like shades of off-white. A white straw hat rested on the table by him. He had white or pale blonde hair clipped close to the sides of a narrow, balding head. Krishna had vanished.
Miss Creed? Anya Creed.
Yes?
The name St. Clair, Cyrus St. Clair. I'm pleased to meet you.
To what do I owe the honor, Mr. St. Clair?
Here, sit, sit.
St. Clair studied Anya for a moment. His eyes were very pale. Their actual color was indeterminate in the dancing torchlight.
Do you consider yourself a good American, Miss Creed?
I'm not sure it's any business of yours, but yes, Mr. St. Clair, I do. Do you?
Testy, aren't we?
I don't know of any productive conversations that ever began that way.
Your country needs you, Miss Creed.
The United States is, we're always told, the world's only superpower. I'm an archaeologist and a reasonably obscure cable television personality. I find it hard to believe I could make such a difference to it one way or another.
I see you've fallen victim to the modern distrust of government. It's too bad. It's government that does the real good in this world. I wish you could see that.
That doesn't make it any easier for me to see what good I could do for an entity as large as the United States government.
With all due respect, it's not the person so much as the circumstances. You are close to Sultan Wira, Miss Creed. No other American has gotten near as far.
What exactly do you mean by that, Mr. St. Clair?
Nothing. Nothing at all. It's just that, well, here you are.
And here you are, too, I notice.
I have contacts in the palace, I admit. I actually get to talk to the Sultan whenever I want to.
And I hardly see why you're bothering with me.
I said I talked to Sultan Wira. I didn't say he listens to me, did I?
And you think he listens to me?
What does he have you here for, then?
I'm not sure I like where this conversation is going, Mr. St. Clair.
Hey, no need to be so touchy. I didn't mean anything by it. It seemed like a fair question to me.
Anya doubted that. She did not, on the whole, care much for Mr. St. Clair or his insinuations. Especially that she should be overawed by his wholly implied connection to the might and majesty of the United States. Still, the fact that he was able to make his way to this garden in the midst of the well-guarded palace grounds was better credentials than any piece of paper he might show her. And she saw no point, beyond recalcitrance, in being evasive about something that was hardly secret, and which he probably knew all about in any event.
Sultan Wira has engaged my services as a consultant on archaeological matters regarding certain artifacts he believes might hold particular significance to the Sultanate, Mr. St. Clair.
That's it, huh? Really?
That's it. So I'm afraid whatever errand brought you here was a fool's errand, Mr. St. Clair, unless it concerns ancient artifacts.
For a moment, he looked at her intently. The hairs rose at the nape of her neck. She wondered if this could be about the coffin. What possible interest could the United States government have in a medieval relic?
On the contrary, Miss Creed, you have yourself some unique leverage here.
To do what exactly?
Make Wira see the simple truth that's staring him in the face. This is a little bitty country in a big bad world. This kid Sultan has done a good job cleaning up after the tsunami, everyone acknowledges that, and he's lucked into a minor ocean of oil. But that just gets the big, bad rest of the world even more interested in tearing off a piece of what he's got.
I don't think Sultan Wira is going to listen to me on the subject of oil rights, Mr. St. Clair.
No. I'm just talking friendship. A man in Wira's position needs friends. He's got himself a terrorist situation here in this fly-speck country that could snowball way the hell out of control. Things could really boil over in a hell of a hurry. That's all we're talking here. He needs a hand. The biggest hand in the world is stretching itself right out to him. Right out. And all I ask is that you see your way clear to helping him take that hand. Grab hold of it.
I still think you overestimate my influence over the Sultan, Mr. St. Clair. Our relationship is strictly business.
Is it? It doesn't have to be.
What do you mean by that?
The Sultan's a young man. You're a long-legged, pretty, all-American girl. People eat that sort of thing up around here.
Now I know I don't like the course this conversation is taking, Mr. St. Clair. And I believe it's over.
That other hoochie isn't holding back. You can bet your sweet little tail on that.
Which hoochie would that be?
That one always slinking around with the jeweled belly button. She's a Sufi, you know.
Is she? Lestari? Is that who you're talking about?
That's her. You know what the Russians call the Sufis? The fanatics. They blame them for kicking their asses out of Afghanistan. And you know what? They've got a point. Much as I'd like to claim all the credit for my colleagues.
Providing all this is true, what has it got to do with me?
I just wonder if you're willing to do as much for your country as that little minx is for her false religion.
If the United States government wants me to sleep with Sultan Wira for its sake, Mr. St. Clair, it's going to have to send me someone higher on the food chain to tell me so.
Ah, Americans. We're so spoiled with all these precious rights of ours, we don't want to do anything to stand up for them. Don't you think that kind of thing led to 9/11?
No, I don't.
Do yourself a favor, Miss Creed. Think about it.
It doesn't warrant any thought, Mr. St. Clair.
Well then, for the sake of your friend the Sultan, and for your own, I'd suggest you just think again.